Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Thursday podcast. Appreciate all you guys that are out there listening. Got two great emails this week, one from Canada, one from Pennsylvania. Folks are listening out there. We really appreciate it. We love you guys. We appreciate our extended audience. They're listening to the sermons. They're listening to podcasts. every now and then they want to tell us that they love us and they appreciate it, and we do as well. I love hearing from somebody. Got a picture this morning of his family, twin boys. It was just neat, and just like an extended congregation. So there's a lot to talk about in politics, and we've got an article here that Joey Kellett sent us. It said, I'm not going to be there, but here's the article for you, and it's about Ted Cruz. We could talk about the whiner-in-chief, right? The whiner-in-chief. That would be Donald Trump. You know,
he got wronged out there.
He sure did. He got robbed. He got ripped off. I'm yelling, shut up. I can't respect you right now. You got beat in Iowa. Shut your pie hole. Go to New Hampshire and see what you can do.
At least it didn't come down to coin flips like the Democrats had. In which Hillary inexplicably won all six of them. What are
six.
The chances? If we all just flipped coins one-on-one, that one of us would win all six.
It was a double-sided coin.
And furthermore, who cares who won in Iowa?
Really,
who cares? I mean, it doesn't determine who wins the election. Many, many times, who wins is not even in the candidate, in the process. You know? And the rest of these yahoos need to drop out. I saw on Facebook, Kellett put up something about sad when Rand Paul dropped out.
A libertarian buddy.
Yeah. Right. Joey, I hope you're listening. I started clapping. Jeb Bush needs to drop out.
Sure does.
Yeah,
oh,
it's just done, man.
Did you see his pitiful appearance, was it this morning or yesterday, where he had to ask the audience to clap for him?
Yeah, it's
it
just
was the most desperate, sad. He said, please clap.
Christy bothers me. I wish that dude would just go back to the buffet. I just don't want to hear him talk anymore about how great he is. I've been here through the thick and the thin. They've thrown everything at me. I'm still standing.
Yeah. He's just laying out Rubio. Every time he gets a chance, he's attacking Rubio. All right, but this article is on Ted Cruz, who happened to win the Iowa caucus. I think.
Yes.
Right.
If he didn't actually cheat like Trump is alleging. You know?
Right. So let's get started, Brian.
Donald Trump likes to boast about how much evangelicals love him, but his showing in the Iowa caucus Monday night demonstrated instead how his love affair with the core Republican bloc was more about a bluster than substance. Some 62% of the Iowa Republicans attended the caucus told entrance pollsters they were born again or evangelical, and 33% of them voted for the winner, Ted Cruz. Although both Trump and Cruz campaign as Washington outsiders, Cruz's victory was of vindication of the enduring influence of at least one Washington fixture, the religious right. Cruz may have campaigned against what he calls the Washington cartel, but the religious right is no stranger to the business of how Washington works. It's a movement that was built out on the contention that conservative Christians need to get involved in politics, if not by running for office themselves, at least by working on campaigns, getting out the vote, and supporting Christian candidates. The goal is a godly government run by Bible-believing Christians, or at least politicians who, like Ted Cruz, are dedicated to the same Judeo-Christian values they are.
Okay, who's our author, by the way? Sarah Posner?
Posner?
Okay, and see if we can find something about who this Sarah is, because it doesn't sound like she's too happy with evangelicals. Trump, in running as a Washington outsider who would completely upend business as usual, misread the religious right's willingness to forego its own influences in the halls of power. While some of his supporters, like some of Ron Paul's evangelical supporters in 2012, believe the religious right leadership is to be just as corrupted as the rest of Washington, it seems a majority of evangelicals in Iowa, at least, are not ready to give up on their pursuit of government based on biblical values. Trumpifying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue apparently is not the path to godly government. All right, what'd y'all find out?
She's a contributing writer for Religion Dispatches, writing on the intersections of religion and politics. She's the author of God's Prophets, Profits, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. So, you can see
I don't think she's a buddy to the evangelical.
Probably on the liberal side of things.
She writes for Salon. I would say that.
The Guardian, The Nation, Salon. Yeah. The Daily Beast, Washington Post. She's got a little bit of everything. But, yeah. Seems like she is not, I would not call her conservative by any means.
Maybe a hater?
Yeah. MSNBC, CNN, NPR. Yeah, there you go.
All right, Cruz ran a textbook religious right campaign condemning Planned Parenthood and same-sex marriage, evoking the Bible in support of conservative political causes, visiting all 99 Iowa counties, and securing endorsements by religious leaders, including from pastors of small churches, as well as from Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, the most influential religious right advocacy group in Washington. Brian?
Cruz's victory speech on Monday night opened with the words, "To God be the glory." He emphasized a cherished religious right idea that people in governments do not confer rights, but that those rights come from our Creator. He cited Psalm 30, verse 5.
Or the Constitution.
Yeah. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. As evidence that Washington cannot keep the people down, or preventing them from following their core commitments, particularly free market principles, the Judeo-Christian values that built this great nation. By gliding effortlessly between free market and Judeo-Christian, Cruz demonstrated his fluency with the religious right's historic anti-government, pro-business stances, along with the culture war issues that have dominated its political activism for the last several decades. As the historian Kevin Cruz showed in his 2015 book, One Nation Under God, How Corporate America Invented Christian America, the religious right traces its root not just to the 1970s in opposition to the Supreme Court's decision to legalize abortion in Roe v. Wade, but to the 1930s in opposition to the New Deal.
So that's as far back as we go? Is that's
in a political spectrum, I guess, is what she's arguing.
All right, go ahead.
Facility in both strands of the movement's history is crucial to attract traditional religious right voters. Cruz's relentless opposition to Obamacare is thus a twofer for him. It is at once a nod to the religious right's disdain for government social programs as tantamount to socialism and to its new front in opposing reproductive rights. The religious freedom war it sparked over the law's contraception coverage requirement. Trump evinced no grasp of either of these commitments.
All right, hold on. So, David, is two for a word?
It is. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow, I've never actually seen that word typed.
I guess it is.
Wow. Yeah. I think I need to figure out a way to use it on a sermon, man.
If,
a two for.
A two for one.
So what about Cruz?
You know, I think she has a point there, that first line there on the top of our second page where it says, by gliding effortlessly between free market and Judeo-Christian. You know, I that's what I see from Cruz, too. He does kind of try to embody both the Christian and the conservative at the same time. And it is really my biggest misgiving about Cruz is he always seems to be performing. He always seems to be... I don't know. It just seems like he's very political. I don't get a real genuine feel from him. And he's got talking points, and he's a good speaker. He's eloquent and all that. But he does. I think he knows the game, and I think that's why he's winning right now is because he's appealing to both your more
well. There was a video
conservatives and your Christians.
There was a video of an Iowa pig farmer.
Yeah,
a corn farmer.
Corn, yeah.
Corn farmer, right?
About the ethanol substance.
Yeah. And oh my goodness, man, the guy just talked him right down and brought him on his side. I bet you the guy voted for him in the caucus.
Yeah, the guy was totally back with
him. You're not getting any votes to, well, I hope some votes come your way.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, it was just remarkable.
And even then, he sounded like a politician in that in that talk. It wasn't just two guys talking. He was kind of putting on a show. You know, and I know that that's part of the thing. That's part of the deal. But, when we talked about Rubio's response to the atheist about where he kind of presented the gospel, that seemed very natural to me. Mm-hmm. It seemed very, you know, we can criticize whatever about his policies and all that, but I get a much more genuine feel from Rubio than I do from Cruz. Doesn't mean he'd be a better president, doesn't mean he's got better policies, that's a different issue, But at least he comes across as authentic to me, and Cruz doesn't always do that.
It's funny, I was watching a Fox interview with Rubio, and the accusation against him was, you know, she said, "You always seem so scripted. You know, why is that?" And he was like, "I don't know." He said, "I just speak from my heart and tell people what I believe in."
Yeah.
And she's like, "Well, you know, I've heard, you know, a lot of people are saying, you know, it's just all scripted. You know, do you memorize all this stuff ahead of time?" And he was like, "No, I just tell what I believe."
Have they heard our president speak?
So anyway, but it's funny you say that, because that's what they were accusing him of, just, you know, being very scripted in everything that he said.
Just a bad evaluator of speeches.
Yeah. But I mean, Rubio does. He's very eloquent, or, you know, he expresses himself very well.
I mean, all these guys are intelligent. They're all intelligent. It's just that, you know, there's a way to be intelligent and come off as arrogant, and there's a way to be intelligent and still be relatable.
Well, you almost,
some do that better than others.
You almost have two approaches to that intelligence. You got the one that says, you know, like Marco Rubio is, I'm just going to tell you what I think, and Donald Trump kind of does that too.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other ones that say, here's how you got to do it, and here's how what you need to say, and you stick to these talking points.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that going on in these things. I mean, that's one of the interesting things about it. Wondering which strategy is going to play out politically.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bill? What's your thoughts on Cruz?
I don't know enough about him yet. You know, I'm interested in the politicians. I'm interested in listening. I know that Trump is a jerk. I know that Rubio is maybe a Christian. And I watch a little bit, but I'm still watching more soccer than I am debates. We'll get closer. I'll do more.
David, do you think Cruz is a Christian?
It seems that way. You know, I haven't seen anything that would necessarily disqualify him. You know, he's not afraid of identifying himself that way. He's, and not just in a nominal way, but in a born again Christian sort of way. And he acknowledges his father was a minister. And
it is, I think.
Yeah, it still is. And I think his wife's parents were missionaries. So he's certainly got some connections there. And there's nothing that leads me to believe that he's. You know, he's not Trump at liberty saying 2 Corinthians, and I'm so proud of being a Presbyterian, even though I've never identified that, and I don't have any need for forgiveness. I mean, that's about as transparent as you can get as far as just fluff, you know, I'm putting this label on to try to get votes. So, yeah, I think he might very well maybe.
Like in NASCAR when they put the hat on for 10 seconds?
Yeah, sponsorship, move it to the next one.
No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you won't hear him saying that at any kind of secular gatherings, you know, whereas I think Rubio and Cruz would. So I think there's a big difference there.
Mm-hmm. So, David, what about this idea of free market? How does free market fit with our Christian values?
That's a really good question.
Because Cruz is clearly free market.
Mm-hmm.
And from a pragmatic perspective, I really appreciated the way he was talking free market with the corn farmer. Did you see that short video, Bill?
Yeah.
And how he was talking about level playing field. Ethanol competes on its own 2 feet. From a pragmatic perspective, with $20 trillion in debt or well on our way to $20 trillion in debt,
mm-hmm.
anything that we can do to reduce subsidies, anything we can do to level the playing field. But is free market really a Christian value?
When I read Proverbs and I read Ecclesiastes, I find things like a liberal soul shall be made fat, and I find that you know, the man that gives to the poor will be God will be a debtor to the man who gives to the poor. But how about Ecclesiastes 11:1? When you cast your bread upon many waters, in season it will come back to you. There's a lot to be said about personal money management in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. And if we're talking about the only other options being socialism, communism, then I would say that Scripture is, if you have to pick a camp to put Scripture in, I don't find any other evidence other than, let's see what you can do with what God gives you. Free market sort of idea. I don't see where God gives government this sort of right or privilege to manage resources and to give people things to hopefully spur growth. So I would concur. I think it is more Christianese than the other viewpoints.
Okay, so what about, just slightly off topic, but it's a political conversation. What about earned income credit there, Bill? You're familiar with that?
I am.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't had it for a few years.
But the concept is out there to where, you know, you paid $500 in taxes and your rebate because you have two kids this year is going to be $4,000.
Right. I think my approach is pretty simple on this. If you can afford it, then we can talk about it. But we can't afford it any more than we can afford subsidies for particular kinds of farmers or energy. You just can't. When we pay down our debt to where we don't owe for generations and generations, but we'd have to have 20,000 billionaires die right now and all of their money come to us to pay off our debt. And that still doesn't solve the deficit issue every year. So whether or not I think it's okay to earn income credit, I know is the question, but to me, I think that we're too far into the conversation at that point. No, you shouldn't have earned income credit. Who's going to pay it? Really, we're just kicking the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're really at the point as a nation where everybody's got to do a little something.
Yeah.
Which no one is willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, you know, can you fit Christianity into economy? I don't know if you can in a specific definitive way, but I would agree with Bill in the sense that everything we see in Scripture deals with individual responsibility. You know, that and even with the church, that the church took care of its members and that sort of thing. People were not forced to do so. The government did not come in and say, you're going to do this. The government didn't manifest resources and distribute resources. And so for those that like to make that argument that, well, you know, Jesus would have been a socialist, you know, I don't think you understand what socialism is if you think that's exactly what was going on.
Well, some of the parables certainly don't indicate that idea.
No, he gave 1 5, 1 1, 1 10 is because of their several ability is what the parable says.
And like you pointed out the other day on that a couple weeks with the Acts sermon, I mean, clearly people still have private property. And clearly some of those people that are in the church are quite rich because they can house churches and they can help, you know, distribute resources and they can provide things, you know, where Jesus had the Last Supper. You know,
If
that was John Mark's mother, which is my opinion, she had a lot of money because that was a rich house to live in. That was the rich money part of Jerusalem. You didn't live in that area if you didn't have any. Didn't have money. So,
in the gospel somewhere, there's an indication that women are financing the work of the Lord.
Luke 8.
Yeah. That's where that's at.
Yeah, a group of women, Herod's steward, and Salome, and a few others, Joanna. So it names some women that provide for them out of their substance, is the terminology there.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, funding.
Right.
Lydia would be another example.
Yeah.
In the parable of the talents, he takes from the one and gives it to the one that has even more, which is not what you're expecting at all.
Or when he's anointed, he even says, you're going to always have the poor around.
So
you're not going to have me forever.
Yeah, but Bernie Sanders says we can fix that.
Well, she says that that's the New Deal is what got the religious right involved in politics.
Maybe it was Christians like some of the abolitionists of the 1800s that might have got us in the game a little sooner. Maybe we go back another 60s. Maybe Frederick Douglass might have been called a Christian.
Yeah.
He might have been called a rightist.
Yeah, if you wanted to go from a purely political spectrum, I haven't studied it, so I don't know, but that would make sense, that the New Deal would have been a tangible turning point for a more conservative group to step up and say, this isn't how it should be done. But I would think it would be earlier than that, too. I mean, whether it's progressivism in the 19-teens or whether it's, you know, racist issues and things like that in the 19th century, big business in the 19th century, could have been other things.
John, what are you looking for?
Oh, there was just something that stuck in my mind from last night's sermon, linking wicked men who took advantage of their workers with other really debauched things. Remember that from last night? That
may have been when you were chasing a rabbit trail. But they said the whole congregation was chasing rabbits.
Many of my congregants were chasing rabbits.
No, this was in one of the passages that you looked at, and I can't remember what it was, but, it was there. But anyway.
Clearly, I think...
But I was shocked. I was just shocked that he put that in the list, in that part. You know, because it was, you know, adulterers and murderers and then those who take advantage of the workers. So my point being is, you know, we always want to choose one or the other, but we tend to leave out sin nature.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no magic bullet. I mean, because...
Malachi 3:5. Yeah. I'll come near you for judgment. I'll be a swift witness against sorcerers, adulterers, perjurers, and those who exploit wage earners.
Those who exploit wage earners, right?
And so, you know, we always want to say it's the other person who's got the issue. You know, it's either the government, big government, or it's it's free market. Well, the problem is, you know, if you have one or the other with you know runs unchecked, they're going to both have problems.
Well, clearly unions. Let me back that word up. I'm not going to say clearly. Let me ask David. It seems to me that unions are a result of people who exploit workers.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's not the biblical solution.
So I guess for me, when I see a politician stand up and say something like the free market is the answer, I say, well, wait a minute. Some of that's been tried before and it wasn't the answer. We had to bring regulations in because if you don't bring regulations in, someone's going to pollute the waters. You know, business is going to dump the coal ash somewhere. So there's a balance, and I just wish someone would speak from, like, the honest-to-goodness place of reality.
Right, and I think that's Ben Carson, and that's why he's not electable.
Right, and that's the other scary part, is because we're not polarized, we can't win.
Yeah, it's like what I've talked about, is you can't take a rational position on an issue. You either have to be extreme right or extreme left. So we either have to be laissez-faire, no government regulation whatsoever, which we've tried, that failed miserably. Or we have to do big government, heavy regulation, which we've tried, that fails miserably. And so you can't come in the middle and make a decent position.
Yeah, it's almost as though you want to say qualified free market.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, there's got to be some sort of regulation. There's got to be some sort of oversight. But there's a fine line there to go too far. So, but nobody wants to have that conversation.
And I think one of the issues with, like, going back to the ethanol thing, you know, if you're a corn farmer, you want ethanol subsidies.
Yeah.
If you're a dairy farmer, you want milk subsidies.
Yep.
And it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, the person voting or in my position always think, you know, if I'm a Christian, I want a Christian government. You know, and on and on and on. And so we say these things that sound great, but wait a minute. Is that really what you mean? Do you really want a free market? Well, I don't want a free market when it comes to the military. There's some things that I think are too big to fail. I want a good, strong military. I'm willing to pay for it, whether it pays for itself or not. I mean, there's just some things, and, you know, I don't know if ethanol is that thing. I don't know if we've got to have ethanol to keep our country strong. I don't know down the future if that's going to come to that. Probably not. But I'm just saying, you know, there's some things where I can't just make a blanket statement and say, this is the answer for everything. And I think that's part of politics, because when they get up there and they make all promises, they get up, oh, it's not going to really work the way I thought it did on the campaign trail.
Well, and half the stuff they say they can't deliver on anyway.
Right.
You know, it's just posturing.
Well, I will tell you, John, for your lawnmower, your chainsaw, your weed whacker, you don't want ethanol,
yeah, that's what
okay?
Sean told
I've heard it's not good for engines.
So it is not good at all. You don't want it. And the government mandate means that there's two places in the city of Fayetteville that you can find the product that you want. Two places. One is downtown, and the other one is over on
Country Club.
Right, and that's it. Because the government said, this is how we're going to buy votes in Iowa. Mm-hmm. We're going to make sure that every ounce of gas in America has, you know...
Yeah, that guarantees us the agricultural...
It guarantees us that vote. That vote. And that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
So when I hear him say free market... I'm nodding my head because I'm really looking at that idea. But then if I think through free market, John, like you're calling me to do, I realize, no, I really don't want complete free market, because that flies in the face of my biblical values, which is we're not supposed to exploit workers, that the one who has the resources is supposed to see that those resources are a blessing from God, and he has a responsibility to bless others with those resources, which means he provides a good job.
Yeah, John, I think what you were referencing with that, throwing those wage earners and stuff in that group, it goes to show you it's not government regulation doesn't solve that problem. A changed heart solves that problem. That's it. The gospel's the only thing that solves that problem. And so we are really, our ultimate shortcoming is we're trying to fix spiritual shortcomings with earthly solutions. And it just complicates the the lack of a new heart.
Yep.
You know?
And I think part of the issue, like, I haven't really deeply researched this, but it looks to me on the surface that one of the conservative talking points in North Carolina is on some of the energy bills is that to keep things the way they are. But part of the problem with solar, for example, is it's very difficult for a homeowner to get a solar panel on your roof because there's third-party laws. in place to help protect Duke Energy. And Duke Energy is, of course, friends with government people. And so a lot of the times these deals are made not necessarily on what's best for your state, but what's best for the people who voted you in. And,
of course.
Don't do that. But no, come on.
We were also about the last state to get rid of that have any kind of restrictive tobacco laws. Why? Because that was such a big part of our economy.
Sure.
So you're not going to kick that out. You're not going to raise the taxes on the tobacco until you're absolutely forced.
So what annoys me is when someone who's like, you know, a Christian and they're going to support this, they have to just defend and take it all. Yeah. No, that's the great law.
How about now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It really sounds like there are no easy solutions to figuring out free market, limited, qualified, how much, who to vote for. So let's see if there's anything more in the article worthy of our attention. There's some consolation for Trump, who equaled Marco Rubio's share of the evangelical vote. They each got 21%, but with evangelicals' outsized representation in the caucus, dominating this constituency was crucial for victory. Given the pre-caucus polling trends, Trump's showing means he's underperforming, and Rubio's as exceeding expectations. And reality is, it really doesn't matter. Iowa really doesn't matter.
No. But I think the thing that I would have taken from the weekend is Rubio has a shot, based on the way that that's not necessarily everything. But you know, if you heard his third place speech, it sounded like a victory speech. You know, considering where he was a couple months ago, he seems to be back in this race.
Well, when you consider the number of candidates that we were dealing with, what was it, 17 or something at the beginning? It was some outrageous number. So top three is awesome when you're dealing with that number of people, and it's going to narrow down. I personally don't think that Cruz is electable.
I may tend to agree with you.
I think he's too conservative. He's too Christian.
Mm-hmm. They're going to paint him as the wacko. That'll be the attacks against him. He's going to be the. I mean, when you can put recordings up of him reading Green Eggs and Ham in front of Congress, you can make him look pretty silly.
Mm-hmm.
When he did with the filibuster last year.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he has no friends in the Senate.
Yeah. There's a good side to that. Obviously, I like some of that too. But yeah, he's not going to get much help from other Republicans.
Well, the problem is Washington is a team sport. You know, that's the reality.
As much as you don't like it, it is.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, of course we want to say, let's go up there and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't work that way. You got to figure out how to get along with people. You got to figure out where to compromise. You got to make a... Gridlock doesn't get anything accomplished.
Yeah.
That's my major issue with Trump. He's such a jerk. Who in the world would want to be on his team?
Now we see him, he's a baby.
Right. He's presently a baby.
Can't take a defeat. And what kind of commander-in-chief can't take a defeat? Because it's going to happen. You need to learn how to deal with it.
Yeah,
I mean, I just don't see him as a viable candidate when it comes to... Who's your vice president going to be?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, it looked there for a minute. It could have been Cruz, but not anymore.
No, they got nasty.
He's ripped him apart. Right. Trump says Cruz can't even run because he's born in Canada. So.
Right, right. And do we really want two white guys on the ticket?
I don't think you do.
Is that going to do anything to value the ticket?
I guess that's my surprise at Ben Carson's ability to pull votes. You know why? You know, you would think the Republicans, you would think they'd be like, you know what, we need an African American. We need it. Just like with last, they tried. I don't know how in the world they thought John McCain would be a great choice, but they tried to counterbalance that with a woman as the vice president. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think it's a bad idea to go, but what's at the Democratic debates? But just straight white folks, right?
And crusty white folks.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But young people are loving Bernie.
Oh, they love Bernie.
What is up with that?
Because he promises them all free stuff.
Yeah. Trophies.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Like Mike Huckabee in 2008 or Rick Santorum in 2012, who, by the way, endorsed Rubio. Santorum endorsed Rubio. Huckabee was said to endorse, but then pulled back. Winning Iowa may not lead Cruz to the nomination, but there's a crucial difference between 12 and at least 16. The 16 perceived frontrunner Trump is hardly the straight-laced family man Republicans settled in on with Mitt Romney in 2012. What's more, Rubio is on an upward trajectory and may end up challenging Cruz's quest to dominate the evangelical vote by capitalizing on eternal changes with evangelicalism, changes that Trump may have been too much of an outsider to see. Rubio's campaign contrasts his style with that of Cruz, emphasizing that he's not aiming to reclaim a purportedly lost Christian nation by electing a pastor-in-chief. He simply presents himself as a committed believer guided by Christian virtue. Whether evangelical outsiders or insiders will be able to detect the difference in the two candidates' styles remains to be seen, but the battle between Rubio and Cruz is reflective of an ongoing debate within evangelicalism about how members should engage politically. Whatever his claim is to some segment of the evangelical vote, Trump is not part of that conversation.
I wonder if he knows that.
It seems as though she is, if she's got to deal with a Republican, it would be Rubio's the one that she wants to deal with.
Yeah, and I think she's showing that they're the only two that are navigating this whole evangelical vote. Sure, there are evangelicals supporting Trump, but let's not pretend that he's an evangelical. You can't even stretch disbelief that far.
Okay, so then, David, answer this question. How do we have, by all reasonable conclusions, an unsaved woman identifying that these two are legitimate evangelicals, Trump isn't, and we have evangelical pastors all over the United States falling all over Trump's feet with the alabaster box of ointment? I mean, it is unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't answer the question. It boggles my mind.
How in the world does the First Baptist, the pastor of First Baptist Church, Dallas, Texas, endorse Trump?
Well, hopefully his excuse will be that was early on and that he's changed his mind. Hopefully. Who knows?
Cruz is his senator.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
Cruz is his senator.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I think it's just pragmatism. They thought Trump was going to be the one who was going to be able to give him a good shot of being enough of a celebrity to beat Hillary.
And it comes back to it again, is, you know, we say that we think like Christians all the time and we should have this Christian worldview, but when it comes to elections, a lot of people don't, you know, and when it comes to living their lives, a lot of people don't, you know, very few Christians have a Christian worldview, and so they'll say, well, I think, you know, Trump can help the economy, so I'm going to vote for him. Well, yeah, but what if he's backwards on all... What about the fact that he's, what, on his third wife? What about the fact, or whatever, how many wives he's had? What about the fact that he's been an absolute jerk to women and minorities and everything else, and he's uncouth, and he's not presidential, and he's not classy, and he's been on reality television. He's been on WrestleMania for... I mean, that's what this guy's done, and we're going to say, you know, yeah, but he can help the economy, so I'm going to vote for him. It just shows you where people's priorities are. It's not about truth. It's not about morality. It's not about the gospel. It's about, I need more money in my pocket.
It seems like somewhere in Matthew it says you can't serve God and mammon at the same time, you know, and yet we're doing everything that we can to do just that. I thought that the Oklahoma Wesleyan president's
Piper
piece was incredible.
Yeah, dude.
Just incredible.
That's two in a row we've been pretty impressed with him with.
That's right. You know, I mean, and I tell you, it just reminds me, and I love these reminders, that Baptists don't have the lock on the market when it comes to Christianity. That there are other believers out there that are seeking to serve the Lord, read the same Word of God we have, pray to the same Lord, have the same Holy Spirit, and are diligently trying to make a legitimate difference. I mean, I believe that man's trying to make disciples of Christ at his university.
Well, I mean, it's more admirable when you're the president of a university that depends on tuition from students.
Yep.
And by making that statement, you know, he alienates a certain number of people.
Sure he does.
But that should be a good thing in the church, because those are the people that need to be alienated. You know, those are the people that need to be not in our assembly.
Yeah, and to be honest, Bill, I thought, Falwell, don't ask me for any more money.
Oh,
don't
man.
Send me another letter.
I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed.
I cannot believe that you endorsed that. Well, first of all, you don't have to endorse him. Nobody cares who you vote for. You can vote privately all you want. You don't. There's no one expecting him to endorse him. The only reason you would endorse somebody is because you perceive he's going to make it to the office, and the earlier you endorse, the greater inside leverage you have. We endorse you. We endorse you when others were endorsing Rubio, and that kind of, and you're just, it's like a bet.
And I thought it was interesting that soon after that, the university Twitter account released a tweet that said, Liberty University does not endorse Donald Trump. That was President Falwell's decision, and that's his personal endorsement. And then his brother, who's the pastor down the road there, said, I'm not endorsing Trump either. So both his brother and the university distanced themselves from the endorsement. That'll tell you something.
Yeah, what it tells you is they realized that wasn't a wise decision.
There's still somebody up there that knows what's going on.
That's right. Yeah. The pushback from that decision must have been huge. Because it's one thing to say, we're going to have these, what do they call them?
Convocations
in which we bring just a plethora of speakers.
Once again.
A plethora of speakers to expose our students to the masses. Yes. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But when you say, here, you know, here, this is our man right here.
Yeah.
When the president says this is our man, he's telling the students, this is who I think you ought to vote for.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, he's not his dad, but the name Falwell carries some weight.
Yes.
And when he throws it out there, everybody thinks Liberty University. You know?
Forever.
Yeah.
Right, that's part of following in your father's footsteps.
You can't disconnect that. Yeah.
Right.
That was sad.
So what do you think? Who are you going to vote for? What is your direction? So New Hampshire, then South Carolina, and then after that it's that primary day, right, where there's like 10...
Super Tuesday.
And then I think sometime after that we're March 15th.
They moved us way up from where we used to be.
Right. Yeah. So we'll get a little bit more attention a little bit earlier in the process.
Since we're one of the swing states.
Right. Yeah, we could easily go all different ways. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, David, to put you on the spot, if you had three to choose for, you'd go with Rubio.
I think he's the best nominee. I think, in my opinion, our best ticket, the Republicans' best ticket at this point is, I would like to see Rubio Fiorina.
She's almost disappeared off the radar.
She has, and I don't know what's happened.
My niece works for her campaign, and she just sent a thing on Facebook and said that the media had uninvited her to the next debate, and basically just that they've written her off.
And Carson's a possibility as well, I think. I just think Fiorina would be better in a vice presidential debate. That's the only reason I lean that way. Carson just doesn't impress me in a debate format. He seems like the nicest guy in the world. He seems like the greatest dude ever. But I don't know that he's presidential or even vice presidential.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've created this world, David, where you have to have this charisma, this presence.
I talk about it with my AP history class all the time. Is, you know, if you go back and look at the pictures of the presidents in the 1800s and the early 1900s, most of those guys would never get elected today.
How about Martin Van Buren? That was a cutie.
Yeah. William Howard Taft gets elected in 1908 at 300 plus pounds. He'd never get elected today. Unelectable. Doesn't matter how great he is, how smart he is. All that kind of stuff. I mean, just go back through all that. I mean, maybe Abraham Lincoln doesn't get elected. That dude was kind of a scary-looking guy. You know,
we
could go through plenty of those guys. You know, those guys would never get elected in a modern TV culture because there is, as much as we don't like it, that I think you should be judged on the content of your character and your ideas, too. In our TV society, if you're not somewhat attractive, you're not going to get listened to.
That's exactly why Obama is who he is.
Exactly.
The speech that I was listening to every word that was rolling off his mouth driving into work this morning, and it was eloquent, it was timed just right, the pauses were incredible. Mm-hmm. He was playing the audience.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he had the audience in his hand. He was talking about fear, he was talking about terrorism, then he moved to the fear of parents with their children growing up, then he talked about the speed of his daughters growing up, then he talked about you're afraid that they won't call you, then he paused for a minute and inserted the word text. I mean, the audience was just on the edge of their seats listening to, forgetting about the fact that yesterday the guy was at a mosque, 3 days ago he approved Planned Parenthood, 8 weeks ago, he was on board with same-sex marriage. Now he's talking about Jesus is the solution to fear, and that the fear, I don't have a fear of the afterlife because my sins have been forgiven and God has granted me eternal life. It's like, my goodness. You know, and he does it in such a way that he's believable.
Yeah.
He's believable.
He seems genuine.
Yeah. Right, exactly, which is what you made a comment with Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Ben Carson is unbelievably authentic.
I agree with you, absolutely.
That what you're getting is the real deal from him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not charismatic enough.
Yeah, I think the reason that I would love for Ben Carson to give vote is not just because I'm white and he's black. Because honestly, I would love to vote for that. I would love to vote for him. It's not because he's a Christian, because I do think he is, but that's not... The reason is because he's never been a politician before. You know, and that's what attracted me to Trump. But Trump is, you know, in many of these months that have occurred since then, you know, he's just shown me that he's not anything even close to my value system. And Carson certainly is. And I don't think, you know, when I was listening to Cruz, he won a senatorial race somewhere, and I think he knows how to yak. I was really turned off the other day when I'm watching, I think, a C-SPAN clip of John McCain giving a shout-out to the Tom Tillis. Was it Tom Tillis?
Yeah, it's the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, he took 5 minutes of chamber time to give a congratulatory speech to the Carolina Panthers. Is that basically what was happening?
Yeah, because his Arizona Cardinals lost to the
Panthers. Yeah, so he had to give a good luck speech to the Carolina Panthers, and it was a bet that he and Tom Tillis had before the game. That guy took 5 minutes of floor time to give a speech about his Arizona Cardinals losing to the Carolina Panthers. And I thought, how can you take an establishment seriously that's wasting money like that? You know, recessing, more subcommittee time, more recessing for a president that is always vacationing. How in the world can anyone respect that? Yeah. So give me the non-politician.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you look at Cruz, you think, is he just like looking at the next person he's going to talk to, or is he really talking to me? I feel like if I was talking to Ben Carson, I would be the most important person in the room for the time we were having a conversation with Ben Carson. If he was at our round table right now, he would be engaging like there's nothing else going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And every time he opened his mouth, he'd think before he opened his mouth.
Yeah. I agree.
And that's why I think he ought to be in a cabinet. I think if you don't put him in a cabinet position, you are absolutely stupid.
Yeah, he'd be my servant chosen general, and it's a no-brainer.
I mean,
I don't even have to interview anybody else.
Right.
It just doesn't, I mean... Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that's exactly it. He is he's very calculated, he's very... I agree. I think he would be a great guy to sit around and have an intelligent conversation with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I thought the moment that I really appreciated when he looked around at the debate and said, how many of you have made life and decisions at 2 a.m. in the morning? You know, and of course they hadn't. A senator doesn't make a life and death decision. Senators never make those kind of decisions. A legitimate life or death decision when you've got real life. And he said, I did that all the time. I did that all the time. And of course he did as a doctor for 40 years of serving as a doctor. But he'll be out. I mean, it's just only a matter of time. He's done. And I think that he should be a candidate for vice president or, at a bare minimum, a cabinet position.
I agree.
Those are our thoughts. Who are you going to vote for? When do you vote next? Put a comment down on this or send us an email. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.